Rona had the hood removed from her eyes only after she was hustled into a car and taken to an immense building several miles away. The air conditioning inside hit her like a brick. It was hot and moist outside, but inside, arctically cool. Only high officers would have such costly temperature controls. She looked around. She was in a marble hall, the foyer to the cylindrical-shaped building above her. The walls were covered with swastikas and a huge banner with Hitler's face. There were footsteps coming down a flight of stairs ahead. It was the man who had bought her, walking with another, even higher-ranked German, an ugly, scarred man with a black eye patch over one eye, a strange covering that seemed to be made of multifaceted glass.
And here she is, Herr Oberführer von Weisley.
Ah, yes, I see. You have not lied. She is quite beautiful indeed. Yes, such fine classical features, like an ancient Aryan goddess. Yes, yes, we must check her. Kurt, bring the templates up to my office.
The guards hustled Rona along behind the Nazi high commander over to the elevator and then up to a plush office suite on the 9th floor.
There. Sit on that sofa.
He seemed to be nervous as he sat several feet away and kept staring at her with a peculiar expression on his hard face. She looked about the room to avoid his steel gaze. There was, of course, the picture of Hitler lit with its own track lighting. The Führer was dressed as a Teutonic knight in shiny armor, astride a strong Germanic-looking steed. Behind him, cities burned, and beneath the horse's front hooves, someone with a long nose and money falling from a purse was being crushed. A Jew, no doubt. The usual Nazi bullshit, she thought, as she scanned the rest of the room. There were immense oil paintings depicting stars, galaxies, and a number of astrological symbols. Sophomoric symbols of reincarnation, predestination, racial memory, and the occult were scattered throughout the room. She turned to the largest illuminated oil painting on the wall to her left and gaped. A tuxedoed Adolf was sitting in a Victorian chair, calm, in control, fatherly, and half lying at his feet was Eva Braun. Not the mousy Eva Braun, Hitler's mistress, that Rona had seen old file photos of in Century City's archives, but a greatly idealized, perfect Eva Braun. She had reddish blonde locks down to her bare, very ample breasts. Breasts with tiny pink nipples. Eva sat absolutely naked, long-leggedly stretched out, looking up at her man, the Führer. Rona realized that Eva's face reminded her not of the real Eva Braun, but of someone else. Then she realized it was her own face. And that full body, strong and big-boned, yet graceful, sexual like a cat. It was Rona's. No wonder the Nazi officer was looking at her so strangely. He sat under the portrait every day, daydreaming, thinking of the glorious German past.
Please, be comfortable. What is your name?
My real name is for my friends only.
Care for some sherry? Perhaps some schnapps?
Nein.
German? Very good. How much do you speak, beautiful woman?
Magister Selber.
So fluent and so vile. But you interest me. Guard, have the skull templates arrived? Thank you. These templates are designed to measure racial characteristics. I will use them to determine how pure you are. Guard, remove yourself. My name is von Reisling, General von Reisling. Perhaps you have heard of me?
Why should I have?
I am in charge of this area of the USSA. I rule all from our fortress at Göringrad.
Göringrad? What happened to Zert?
We had it destroyed after a complication at Forrester Valley. It had become imperfect. No matter. Göringrad was always to be the perfect city. As a matter of fact, it has been ceded to me. This is to be the seat of the Fourth Reich, the new Germany. Relax. I only wish to remove your garments. These silly clothes will have to be cut off. A woman like you should be seen fully to be appreciated. I will arrange proper dress for you later. Ah, what have we here? White-tipped breasts. Such a wonderful roundness. Like a German goddess. Ah, let us see the rest.
He continued to cut away at her garments until the only thing she had on were the sparkling red high-heel shoes. He stood up and admired her. Then he walked over to the desk to the pile of labeled templates, cut-out profiles of the ideal Aryan woman. He picked up the first one and carefully placed it against her silhouette.
Not quite. But that's type 6, the lowest. Let's skip to number 3. Still not quite. There is one template left. Well, it could not hurt to see. Mein Gott! Eva Braun! You are the reincarnation of Eva Braun!
Rona suddenly had a hunch. If she was a goddess, then he was a mere mortal. Perhaps she could use it to her advantage. She glared at him, trying to work some of the ESP that Rock had shown her, trying to reach into the German's mind to make him fear her.
Yes, I am Eva Braun, Hitler's wife. How dare you treat me like this? I have put up with your stupid insults, your coarseness long enough. Now kneel before me, cur. Properly show your respect.
Von Reisling grew white, his one good eye fixed like glue to her glaring green eyes that were so dominant. He fell to his high-booted knees and crawled the distance to her along the floor. Rona was amazed at how well it was working.
Now, show your respect.
The Nazi leader began licking the fronts of her high heels, then her ankles.
Just the shoes, insolent one.
Oh, yes, my goddess, yes. Just to kiss your shoes, yes, yes.
She let him grovel and slobber at her feet while she tried to think of what to do next. Within hours, Rona was unbound, bathed in milk, and dressed in a golden robe, classical Greek style, as Eva Braun wore in many of the idealized paintings of her. She was given silk slippers and 2 handmaidens, and taken to a vast, white-draped room on the top floor of the cylindrical building that was von Reisling's headquarters. From her barred window, she surveyed the city of Geringrad, only 3 months old, but growing in leaps and bounds as money was poured in from Vasily in Moscow. Down and to her left, she saw the slave market where she had been sold just hours before. Now she was here, in a palace, a living goddess to be worshipped. Fate handed out strange surprises. If she could just somehow use her position to find Roxen and kill these Nazi swine. But she felt suddenly, achingly tired, and lay her red tresses on the satin pillows of her bed. The 2 maids came and tucked her in, and then sat near her, watching as the goddess slept. But the news the next morning was sobering. Yes, she was Eva Braun, reincarnated goddess. They wouldn't harm her. They would feed her, let her sleep, let her do anything. Anything but leave. She might spend the rest of her life comfortably, with perfumed servants, with ethereal gowns, untouched, a virgin. But she could never leave. Never. That whole day, high Nazi officers came to see her and fall at her feet. Von Reisling had come twice, begging her to let him once again kiss her bare feet. She kicked him in the face when he tried, but her physical and verbal abuse of the Nazi ruler seemed to only increase his affections for her, for he had found in his mind the one, the perfect woman, and he wished to be punished by her. She was given a picture of Hitler to sleep with. Suddenly, her new vocation as Nazi goddess didn't seem to hold too many possibilities. It was a prison. A prison from which she might never escape.
How is he? Is he going to be...
It is very serious.
Well, is he still alive?
Yes, but barely.
But he's stable.
For now. He has had a very serious heart attack and he's quite frail. I want to keep him under observation.
I want all personnel to leave the operating room. I wish to be alone with the Premier.
Sir, I do not think that...
Do you go against the Premier's closest advisor?
No. Yes, sir.
Grandfather, you cannot die. I see how they look at me. They want me gone. If you pass, they will come for me next. My head will be on a pole, while the Politburo elects Kilov as the new Premier. I know you are afraid. That is why you enlisted the Nazis to your side. But you must realize, peace cannot be brought through the crushing of those who disagree. Tyranny will only result in the birth of those who will destroy you. I know you are stronger than this. The doctors may be influenced by Kilov. I must try and help you. In this bag, perhaps, is the key. We cannot let others see.
From the bag came a brass bowl and a handful of dried snake flesh. Rahala continued taking out potions, tinctures, and other objects from his childhood. If modern medicine couldn't restore Vasily, he would have to. A pungent, acrid smoke rose up, covering the Premier's face and chest. He walked in a circle around the dying man, occasionally rubbing a powder or waving an object over the Premier's face. The stainless steel door to the OR was open a crack, and from the spot that Tsarina Alexandra had once stood, observing her husband's infidelities, the officers of the elite Imperial Guard stood, their jaws dropped, listening to and watching the incredible sight. Sorcery in the world's capital. The days dragged on like a funeral dirge for Roxanne and the other slaves. Each day they were awakened at 6 from their hovels and sent out to work. Work for 10 hours and break for a quick meal of nearly rancid gruel. Then they would work for another 6 hours before being sent back to their barracks. They passed the night feeding station at the gate of the slave sector of the fortress, where they were given a bowl of potatoes and a slice of bread. Whenever the Doomsday Warrior worked at the swamp, he heard the voices and temporarily lost his bearings. So he was extremely careful when unloading the bodies into the swamp, making sure that he never was within calling distance of the mysterious voices. The swamp just kept taking all that they dished in, its wet green jaws more than ready to take everything that the Nazis could dump, bottomless, voracious. Back in the hovel, Roxanne had to be equally wary of the man he had bested. Foster avoided the Doomsday Warrior like the plague. There was a strange power vacuum now in the concrete hut. Foster 236 had ruled them all with an iron fist, taking what he wanted, but also in his own cruel way, he kept order among the savage group. Now, when Roxanne was not there, he still ruled, demanding and taking. But when he returned from the swamps that night, there would be an eerie silence. He could sense the strange chill, the nervousness in the air when he returned. Each night, Rock went straight to his sleeping square at the far end, where he would sit in the near darkness, watching the others watching him. They were like savages, these Americans. They had been taken and enslaved, and they had forgotten what it was like to be free. They would be reminded, and soon. But first, Roxanne had to remember who he was.
Yes, this is your past. You must remember, there is much danger. Look and try to remember.
Is that?
Yes, that is you. After your family was killed, you wandered the wilderness. You grew up out there.
I look so lost.
You were, but the mountains helped raise you.
The mountains? Who the hell am I?
The next day, when Roxanne arrived at the central square to be trucked along with the other men of the corpse detail, they were instead taken to another part of the fortress. the troops barracks of the Nazis on the far side of the city.
Hello all, and welcome to your special assignment for today. We have had a small outbreak of anthrax. A number of our men have fallen prey to this disease before we managed to inoculate ourselves with a special shipment from Russia.
Shh, a small outbreak. There's got to be at least 300 soldiers in that pile.
No interruptions! Now, your job is to take out these corpses and bring them out to the swamp.
Do we get anything to cover our mouths?
You have shirts. Use them! That is all.
On his third trip out of the warehouse, Roczen looked up and noticed a high steel tower several hundred feet away. He saw a woman high atop it, her hair catching the sun's rays and reflecting them dazzlingly from her long red hair. He felt a sensation, terrible and wonderful at the same time, sweep through his body. The woman. She was beautiful. And somehow, he felt he knew her. He stared up the distance separating them, and saw that she was looking down at him. Her eyes fastened on him, and she began yelling something, but she was too far away to hear. But somehow, he felt that if he just concentrated...
What the hell do you think you're doing, scum? Load those bodies, or you'll be one of them.
Rock turned around, catching one more glimpse of the mysterious woman, and re-entered the barracks of the dead. When he came out and looked up, dragging a body along the ground, she was gone. Disappeared inside the conical steel tower in the sky. They moved the bodies for hours, filling the truck, taking them around the back of the Nazi fortress on a long circuitous route to avoid contaminating any other part of the fortress, and then to the swamp.
Heave! Now push it back!
Yes. We are the disposed. Our lives from death.
Stop it!
You okay? You're looking pretty pale.
I guess I don't know.
Well, I guess we should all be pale. We're moving anthrax-infested bodies, after all.
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, who was that woman on the tower?
Oh, yes. That's the goddess. They worship her in the Hitler pantheon. The reincarnation of the great goddess Eva Braun.
Eva Braun? You mean...
The one and only. Von Reisling crawls at her feet. He licks her shoes, or so one of the servants there told me.
They were trucked back to the fortress after midnight, missing even their feeding. Rock didn't even give a damn. There was too much to think about. The moment he walked in the door to his dilapidated concrete barracks, the stench of the place hit him like a fist. The single candle that was always lit on a small table in the center of the room flickered out a dismal light over the cold concrete floor, filled every square inch by sleeping slaves. As Roczen walked between them, heading toward his spot, he looked down on the rags, the caked faces filled with sores, the mounds of excrement that sat between them in little piles as they defecated right where they slept. He saw the roaches crawling among them from body to body, eating crumbs and flecks of sour stew from the slaves' very lips. He saw rats darting, scampering among the unconscious bodies, grabbing whatever had fallen to the cold floor. Suddenly, he felt his entire being filled with a revulsion beyond words. That men, his own fellow Americans, should be living in such filth, such stench, that even the lowest animal form on Earth would not allow itself to sink to. His brain felt like it was going to explode with accumulated rage. He tried to control himself as he felt an erupting explosion of fury rising in his guts and climbing into his chest. But there was no holding back.
That's it! Everybody get the hell up! You can't live like this anymore! Not even animals stoop to this level of filth! We're gonna change things! You want a boss? You like being told what to do? Okay, I'm the new boss! You wanna try and kill me? Go ahead! Be my guest! But until then, you're all gonna listen to me! You got that?
They looked at him with terror. Foster 236 watched from the far end of the room, He knew he couldn't beat the man one-on-one. He would need to attack when he was defenseless. He felt the solid shaft of the large hammer he had stolen from his factory where he worked.
I said you got that! Good. Now we're getting somewhere. First, we're gonna clean this place. No filth, no dust, no shit, no vomit, no spit, no piss, no nothing. Clean. Now say it after me. Clean. Good. Excellent. Clean. Now get your fucking asses out there. Fill up those water buckets from the pump and wash this place down. Now!
He rushed toward the walls of the barracks where the men stood, forcing them all to run by him and out the door. Within a minute, the place was emptied out, and just the filth-encrusted blankets and only the bits of clothing the men had left behind in their panic sat there, all covered with so many layers of grease and dirt that they were nearly stiff. Objects set into rigor mortis.
Oh, God, this place is disgusting.
Roxon walked outside and saw one of them slowly filling a bucket from one of the four pumps set in the ground.
You three, join that one pumping. You're all pumpers. You keep pumping until I tell you to stop. You ten, go back inside. Bring every bit of clothing, bedding, whatever, out here and wash it down. Nothing goes back inside until it's been washed. Nothing! You men are the water brigade. When they hand you the buckets, you pass them to one another so that these five men here can flood the floor down. Now go! Do it!
He stood back as the entire human machine went into operation. Every one of them would gladly have seen Roxon dead at that moment, but their sheer fear of him made them move, first slowly, and as he glared at them, more quickly. And it worked. The water was passed, the clothes were brought out, the place was flooded again and again with water, and then mopped out through two drainage holes on the floor using pieces of cardboard turned on their edge. After the third washing, Rock had them stop. He glanced inside. The place looked beautiful. Dilapidated, windowless, but it was clean. Little pools of clear water, sparkling from the moon's light, stood every few feet around the wide floor. The smell of shit was gone.
Great! Now it's bath time. Whoever wants to sleep inside there tonight is gonna take a bath under those pumps, you understand?
What? I ain't taking no damn bath.
Really?
Yeah.
Everyone takes a bath, one way or another.
It was nearly 4 a.m. before Roxon allowed them to once again enter the barracks. They quickly found their previously owned territory, creating their own little squares out of coats, cardboard, pieces of wood, and then they all lay back, sopping in their wet clothes. Roxon made his way over to his corner, where he made a small bed for himself from his field jacket.
These are the new rules. We don't shit or spit in here anymore. That's all done in pits at least 50 feet upwind of here. We'll dig holes tomorrow. We'll have a thorough cleaning of the place, the inhabitants and their clothing, once a week. All bugs and rodents are to be killed the moment they're spotted. Once again, you are welcome to try and kill me. If you do, the rules, I would imagine, will no longer apply. Until then, they do apply.
Roxon let his head drop back and prepared to sleep.
This is great and all, but while you're making us men, what the hell do we do with it? We're all lost here, none of us will even be alive in a few months. Why?
That's an excellent question. Who said that?
I'm Tony 57. My real name is John Lyons.
Well, Mr. Lyons, we do it because we are men. Because whether we live or die, we must do it as men. When you let the invader take your mind and soul, then he has won. When he has only your body, he has something that could turn on him at any moment.
But we'll all die.
I'm afraid I agree. Only Ted Roxon could save us.
Roxon? Who's Ted Roxon?
Who is Ted Roxon? He's the man our rulers fear. He's a free fighter and has done incredible damage to their armies. He's the most wanted man in America. The Russians have his name and picture, only no one really knows for sure what he looks like anyway. They have his description up in every military base in the country. Reward of 100,000 rubles for any man, red or slave, who finds him and turns him in. He could save us. He's the only one who could. There are stories that he has even freed slaves and prisoners in many fortresses, but no one knows for sure. Russians don't speak of him, so it's all just told from stranger to stranger. I know he exists, and I know he'll never come here to this camp to save us. Not here. We're the lost, the forgotten, the unknown dead.
In the Kremlin building known as the Presidium, Vasily sat in his office. Rahala's treatment had worked, but only partially. He sat shaking, every nerve in his body vibrating wildly. But he was alive. Only the next few days would tell his fate. There was one difference in the usual scene of the Room of Power. Vasily's wheelchair was not behind the marble-topped premier's desk. It was alongside the desk, and behind it sat Rwanda Rahala, who had been declared deputy premier, with all the powers of the office for the period that Vasily would be indisposed. Power had been transferred to him by Vasily himself through a series of nods of the head. He didn't seem to have the strength for anything else. Rahala signed paper after paper, forging the premier's signature, which he had done many times in the past when Vasily's hands had been so racked by arthritic pain that he couldn't move a finger. The next group in to see the premier was a contingent of military officers, from all branches, whom Rahala had ordered to join him in the premier's office. But Rahala knew that the brass would not listen to him alone, so he rigged a small electric stimulator into Vasily's wheelchair. When he pressed a button hidden beneath the desk, the barely functioning premier would open his eyes, smile, and nod yes. And Rahala would need those signs of assent, for he was about to order a strike against KGB headquarters in his native country of Kenya. An all-out attack to wrest the province from the cruel hand of the KGB, which had staked the country, and much of East Africa, for its own within years of the nuclear war a century earlier. Rahala had tried for years to get the premier to agree to such a move, but the grandfather had always stalled and promised action in the future. But Rahala could wait no longer for such a promised day. It could mean his life, but he would gladly give it if it meant freeing his homeland from the tyranny of a century.
Come in.
But instead of generals and admirals, it was Secret Police Chief Bakunin and six armed plainclothes men.
What is the meaning of this?
Orders of the new committee for proper succession. You are removed from office on specific charges of...
Charges? What charges? I occupy this office by virtue of the Premier's proclamation.
Ah, yes, the proclamation. A proclamation acquired by the illegal use of sorcery. Sorcery is a crime against the state. It cannot exist under atheistic communism. Remove this man to Section B of Lyubganya prison.
Premier Vasily disapproves of this illegal interference of my carrying out his specific orders. Don't you, grandfather?
Rahala pressed the button beneath the desk. The premier appeared to wake up, and his head bobbed up and down several times as the neck muscles were stimulated.
See? The premier orders you six men to arrest Comrade Bakunin and all the conspirators involved in this new committee, whatever that is. Immediately! Don't you, Premier Vasily?
The guards looked at each other, frightened and confused.
Do it!
The guards slowly turned their weapons toward their commander and disarmed him. Their fear of the power of the premier was greater than the fear of Bakunin. They would obey the grandfather and Mother Russia. Rahala turned toward the most intelligent-looking of the secret police squad.
You are the new commander of the SP. Premier Vasily will want a complete report on your rounding up of the conspirators by tonight. Put Bakunin in holding until I come to speak with him.
The guards took him at gunpoint from the room.
I won't be able to keep this up for long. They will undoubtedly return within days, if not hours. We need to get out of the country. But how? And why?
The answer came to him in a flash. He would go to the USSA, a fact-finding mission with the premier. He would call a summit with Colonel Kilov and President Zhabnov. He would tell them it was to bury the hatchet between the Red Army and KGB forces, to get their real enemy, Ted Roczen, the Doomsday Warrior. He was the one man that could bring them all together. And at the same time, it would get Rahala and the Premier away from all these plotters, away from the new committee. Ted Roczen opened his eyes to see a hammer descending. It was Foster 236. Roczen jumped to the floor, ignoring his throbbing neck. Foster must have missed caving in his head with the first blow. As he fell into a fighting stance, Roczen had a sudden realization.
I know who I am. Try again.
I'm not gonna try.
You dirty little...
You got that right.
Oh my God.
I'm Ted Roczen. You were saying last night that he would never come to save you. Well, I have come. I'm gonna get you all out of here. Every fucking one of you. We're gonna fight them, starting right now. I need you to help me. In return, I'll blow this whole damn dump to hell. You'll live like men from now on.
I'll help you.
The man who had questioned Roczen stepped forward. He was just a sprout of a man still in his teens. Yet Roczen could see by his hard-set eyes, his firm jaw, that he was someone to be trusted.
Great. Now you're a lieutenant. What's your name again? Your real name?
Lyons, sir. John Lyons.
Lieutenant Lyons. You'll help me whip things in order.
Oh, yes, sir.
I guess I'll come too. I was talking to you, showing you around. Aid in a legendary Roczen raid. I don't care if I die. I've been dead for the last 7 years. I'd like to have a chance to die fighting these bastards. I'd like that a lot.
He walked over and joined Rock and Lyons. Something was changing about them all now. Another and then another stepped forward until 75 of the 150-man barracks had come over.
All right, men. We're heading out now. Make sure to crouch low so as not to be spotted. For everybody who's staying here, I only pray that you find the courage to stand up for what you believe in.
Roczen led his group out, heading down one of the darker side streets. They managed to avoid guards for about 2 blocks. Then they rounded a corner and saw a German machine gun post. 2 of the 3 inside the sandbag enclosure were asleep. The third, reading a German propaganda magazine.
Follow behind me and keep silent.
Rock crept right up to the reading German and rose up behind him.
Now!
Rock's team dove on top of the other two, making quick, if somewhat messy, work of them. They headed on as Rock searched for the balcony-ringed tower where he had seen Rona. He saw it, 10 stories tall, rising above the other squat utilitarian cement buildings. There were only 5 guards at the entrance. The Nazis were overconfident. They couldn't imagine these humble slaves rebelling. So much the better.
Let's go!
Within seconds, 5 bloody bodies tumbled to the dusty ground.
Great work. All right, guys. Grab their weapons and stay just inside. We need 5 standing outside to replace the guards. Lyons?
Yeah.
Grab that Kalashnikov. You're in charge of the guards out here.
Wow. Yes, sir.
Right. Let's go, men.
Roczen moved up the circular outside stairs of the steel and aluminum tower 3 steps at a time. At the 4th floor, he suddenly came upon a seated guard who looked up startled. But Roczen didn't hesitate. Roczen kept going up the stairs. He hesitated just before the 10th floor, edging around the wall of the entrance room. Just as he expected, five of them, and these more alert-looking than the others. Probably Von Riesling's personal SS unit. The nice thing about being in a hurry is not having to make plans. Rock stood up and walked briskly across the floor with a big smile on his face.
Joel, comrades, mein Kampf ist der Führer.
The troopers were so taken aback by the fool and his pidgin English that they forgot who and what they were for just a second or two. Enough time for Roxen to walk the 30 feet separating them. As he rushed toward them, they snapped out of their daze and reached for their submachine guns. Roxen moved fast, taking out three in an instant. He grabbed the fourth as he drew his sub.
I'll take that.
He rushed past the sprawled Nazis and through the door they had been guarding. There she was, lying naked on the bed, covered by only the thinnest of silk sheets. Her large breasts were revealed as she sat up, her grim face expecting the worst. Then she saw his face by the light reflecting in from the outer room.
Rock! It's you! Oh, God!
Oh. She flew from the bed, letting the sheet fall from her, and ran to him, wrapping her arms around him, pressing her breasts, her hips, her legs against his live body.
Oh, Rock! I felt your presence from the moment you arrived here, and I sent out like you taught me, but I never received anything back. And when I saw you below, moving the bodies days ago, I saw you look at me, yet you didn't seem to recognize me.
I know, Luna. After the artillery shell, I couldn't remember anything. I've been hearing these horrible voices, but I hadn't known why. And then the glowers. Well, anyway, we've got to get the hell out of here. Some of the other slave workers are with me. They're guarding the front entrance.
Making some more soldiers? I want to see this. Let me just get some better clothes. They made me a Nazi work uniform, just my size.
You're gonna walk around with a swastika on your sleeve?
Nope. Let's go.
They headed quickly out the door.
Thanks. Grab a gun.
Feels good to be packing again, Rock.
Rock and Rona joined the free slaves at the ground floor, who seemed somewhat upset. They pointed to the left, barely able to speak, edging back around him as if seeking protection. The Doomsday Warrior turned and looked at the five tanks and 100 German troops advancing on them in a huge column about 150 yards away. Lyons and his men were picking some off, but there were too many.
What we do? Yoda Roxen! What we do?
Come on! Follow me downstairs. I heard Von Riesling mention a basement escape mechanism.
Rock directed the free slaves, who had guns taken from the Nazis, to set up a line of fire on the advancing troops. They needed every second they could get. Rock and Rona tore around the main floor of the cylindrical tower, searching for the hidden entrance.
Ah! I found the switch!
Everybody, hurry!
They went down the stairs and found the building's electric and microwave power stations. Off to one side was a tunnel, only 5 feet in diameter, a perfectly round tube covered with a smooth, shiny metal. Right at the mouth of the tunnel, which seemed to stretch on forever into the unlit darkness, sat a small tubular vehicle, about 6 feet long. The cockpit was open.
Roxen! Roxen, they're closing in! Our firepower isn't stopping them anymore! Hey, we got 6 men shot!
Get the men down here! We'll go through this tunnel here! Blow it up behind us! But fast, man, fast!
Lyons rushed back up and began herding the rest of the men down.
Tanks open fire. Rona, does this thing work? Maybe we could...
No time, Rock. Now, how do we...
Rona, the hatch is sealing.
What? I didn't press anything. It was picked up automatic.
Roxen saw that the egg-shaped craft was inching forward down the tunnel. With animal speed, he leaped forward. If he could open the cockpit, maybe it would stop. Rona, too, was struggling to open it. There didn't appear to be any way. Roxen reached out a hand and grabbed hold of a luggage rack as he slipped. He flew behind the screaming, crackling steel cigar, hanging on for dear life. The cylindrical craft seemed to accelerate every second, borne down the tunnel into which it fit perfectly by some kind of electrical charge, which crackled with static around the edges. Roxen reached his other hand forward as well and hung on, gripping the steel shaft at the back with all his strength. The perfectly smooth edges of the tunnel created no friction against his clothes, so he slid along effortlessly behind it. But the men back there, the men he had left, he felt torn with confusion. They needed him, yet so did Rona, and if he let go, he might smash up and down the walls like a ping pong ball at such great speed. He'd have to hold on for now and wait. The tube shot through its hidden tunnel for about 25 seconds, covering a distance of nearly 2 miles. They came to a sudden but smooth stop at the other end of the tunnel, which opened into a dimly lit storage room of some kind.
Rock, all those men there.
I've got to get back to them. How do we work this thing?
But they couldn't get the craft to budge. It seemed that the craft had only been designed to go one way.
God damn it! Let's just get the hell out of here. See where we are.
Rock headed for a door at the far end of what looked like a warehouse, filled with heavy industrial equipment and supplies.
Oh! This place smells terrible!
It's where I worked. Look, on the other side of the gate is a railroad car we used for dumping corpses.
You dumped? You mean this swamp is full of...
No time! Look!
Suddenly, they saw lights bobbing up and down, coming down the road that led from the fortress itself. A dozen or more armored vehicles came streaming right toward the warehouse. They knew the other end of the tunnel, and had sent men to bite down on whatever came out this end. Rock's battle strategies had gone awry rather quickly. He had been too anxious to get to Rona, to see her. He should have thought things out more. Now, all those men, they would have seen him going on the tube. It gave him a sickening feeling in his gut. They would think he had fled, a coward, that all his words about becoming men were lies. Roxen ducked his head back inside the warehouse and looked quickly around for anything they could use, a vehicle, a weapon. But there was nothing. He noticed a float on a shelf and walked over. A CO2 raft. He grabbed it and some rope and threw them over his shoulder.
Come on!
Where the hell are we going to go cruising out there?
Going into the swamps. It's the only place they won't dare follow. We'll hide inside and come out and somehow get back to those men. I pray some are left.
They rushed through the darkness, following the railroad tracks that Roxen had gotten to know so well in his time here in Geringrod. They had gone but half the distance when the far dawn began breaking through the thick clouded sky above. The great cumulus mountains took on deep electric purple tones as the sun reflected off their curving mile-high sides. The ground around the fleeing free fighters grew from black to gray, and suddenly they could see everything. Could see the flat, wet reed fields all around them, the tracks heading off to the foul swamps which lay ahead and behind them. The German attack force was closing in every second.
Faster!
They flew toward the swamps, jumping right and left every second or two. They had practiced this style of avoidance running in CC and moved along with a perfect cadence, shifting, evading, but never slowing their charging stride. At last, they arrived. The thick green bubbling slime lay at their feet.
Let's see how this works. Pray this thing doesn't have a leak, or we got some major problems. Looks good.
We're really going in?
The rising sun was now a red pearl on the tongue of a far-off mountain, illuminating the thick, rippling green slime with a ghastly pinkish color.
Oh, Rock, if I end up drowning in this green mud, I'll kill you.
Roxen stepped in and kicked off from the bank. The raft lazily slid out into the thick green porridge, topped with dead leaves and vines fallen from surrounding mutated willows that stood in groups every 20 or 30 yards.
See? I even have a paddle.
That really makes me feel better, Rock. I want you to know that.
Behind them, the Germans roared toward the swamp, opening up with everything they had.
I'm gonna shoot for that grove of trees. It should give us some cover.
The Nazi vehicle screamed to a halt right at the swamp's edge. All but two, that is, which misjudged the amount of solid land left and flew right into the stuff.
Almost there.
Come on.
Made it! We're free.
Stop! Damn you!
Just feet from the shore, two of his vehicles and nine of his best men were being sucked under to horrible deaths. Suddenly, they were gone, straight down into the seemingly bottomless swamp.
Do not think this is over! We will come after you! We will bomb you! You will not humiliate the Fourth Reich! That I promise you! All of you, stay here and continue firing for at least an hour. Perhaps one of you idiots will learn how to aim in that time.
With the morning mist rising higher and thicker by the second, Roxanne headed further back into the swamp. Within minutes, there was nothing but thick fog around them, tinged with the pungent smell of the rotting swamp. Roxanne couldn't even see Rona at the far end of the raft, only 6 feet away. He slowed almost to a crawl.
We'll have to wait for this mist to rise a little.
But what about the gunfire?
We're almost half a mile away. There's no way in hell their bullets are even going to make it this far.
Within another 20 minutes, the heat of the sun burnt off the top layers of fog. 3 feet above the green swamp, the air was clear. The lowest level remained thick with the gray-green smoke swirling above the water all around them. Rock stood up so he could see above it, and carefully began paddling toward what he thought was the shore. But after about 5 minutes of edging ahead, and seeing only more green swamp, more groves of thick-vined swamp trees, and no shore, Rock came to a stop.
Do you have something to tell me?
Afraid so. I hate to say it, but I think we're lost. But I'm sure we can find our way out again. After all, these swamps are only about
50 miles wide. Oh, God, some of it got on me. Oh, my God. I think there's something down there.
It's probably just a snake or something.
It's the or something that concerns me. What kind of creatures could live in this stuff? What if they're mute?
They have come. Come to us. Come to rest forever. The freshness of life. Such a change from our existence. Such a delicacy. A treat for us. It's been so long since we have tasted the living.
Rona, do you hear them?
I think so. Yeah, I hear it too. It's some kind of telepathy. Could it be the glowers?
No, listen to them. They're hungry.
Rock, what's going on?
Stay back. Let's see if we can.
Huge shapes rose from the swamp. They were vaguely humanoid, but nearly 10 feet tall, and they seemed to be creatures from the swamp itself, dripping green figures of pure rot and decay. Their heads seemed featureless, just mounds of the dripping slime. Their immense arms reached out toward the raft, the green rot of their being dripping down. They started converging on the raft, their swampy hands reaching.
Stop!
The dripping piles of filth stopped dead in their tracks, frozen in confusion. None had been able to speak with them before.
Stop! What dares talk?
A man. A man who flees the German and Russian armies. Armies that kill. We come in peace. I speak to you as a brother of the Earth.
Brother? We are brothers to no one. We are Narga, the Undying Ones. We kill all who come here. We are created out of death, out of mold and rot. In this we give back to the world of the living. All living things that come to this green hell must die.
No!
You! How can you talk with us? You are a human being. The others cannot speak with us.
I am not human. I am mutant. A new species.
A mutant? You call yourself a mutant? To us? Eat him. Yes. Eat him and the girl. They will be tasty. No, not yet.
Who are you?
We are the ugly, the cursed, the damned God's creatures. This is our world. The mud, the quicksand, the rot. We are the rot. The rot is us. We were created out of the darkness, and all who come here shall join us. Why have you come, puny human? Did you not know the price for entering this foul place?
I came to escape from the Nazis. We were captured and made into slaves by them. We fight on the side of America. We are free fighters. You did not know that this was your world, or we would not have trespassed.
Yes, the Germans.
As the being spoke, a slow waterfall of green foam dripped continuously down its immense chest and legs. It seemed that it should almost just disintegrate as its physicality kept dripping, but somehow it didn't lose any mass. Perhaps the creatures kept sucking the swamp itself from below, like a pump, continuously replenishing their substance. The thing's head turned so that Roxanne could suddenly see two glowing red eyes.
We were created by the German death makers. We were slaves women used up by them in the skull, in this place of wet hell. Our dying flesh mingled with chemicals and the radioactive poison and germs of the swamp. And somehow we found ourselves coalescing, coming into being, if this can be called being. Then we were reborn. From human into monster. This is not life. It is an eternal death. We cannot die, though we wish more than anything to do so. We remember our human selves, our wretched lives serving for the Reds and the Nazis. But now our existence is a million times worse. We and the filth are one. Our bodies, our minds, made of nothing but poison and death. Melted, rotted, putrescence. We are prisoners here, trapped inside these monstrosities. We wish only to be released.
What is your name?
I am Nitrogen Carnivore. We are named from the foul elements from which we were created.
I am monoxide blood.
We must eat.
Yes, yes, they are warm. Warm nitrogen. It's been so long since we had our food. Everything's already a cancer by the time it gets to us. Only an occasional snack of a hand or an arm. They are big. Enough for us here if we don't share with the others.
Rock, tell them who you are.
Good idea. Narga, my name is Ted Roxanne.
Roxanne, I've heard of such a man.
Are you telling the truth?
Look into my mind, and you'll see it's the truth.
I remember your name from before. They tried to stop your name from being even spoken in the labor camps. I spent most of my human life in those camps.
The tree-sized leader of the swamp monsters stood back, as if really seeing Roxanne for the first time.
We will not eat these.
But what about
that? Is final. You will come with us to our home. We will show you to the others.
He reached down the dripping green arm, nearly 7 feet long and as thick as a log. As his rough-shaped appendages that served as hands grabbed hold of a rope at the front end of the raft. Turning around, the immense swamp carnivore moved off into the dead center of the vast swamp as the others followed. Roxanne noticed that the Narga weren't so much wading through the swamp as the swamp was continually shifting its shape to form the creatures. They were truly of the slime, sentience transferred to decay. Rona was trying to get even deeper down inside the raft, as if it were possible. Roxanne put his hand on her shoulder and tried to reassure her.
I know they're not too pretty, but I definitely established contact with the leader. And
think we're gonna be okay.
I guess. After seeing the glowers and their organs on the outside of their bodies, I shouldn't be so quick to judge. But, God, they're ugly. My stomach turns just looking at them.
I know. We've got to take their word right now.
At least with the Nazis, we knew what we were getting into.
Roxanne watched as they were pulled even deeper into the putrid swamp. He knew there was no use trying to figure out where they were going or a way back. The swamp was an endless morass of green and groves of thick trees and swamp vines which dropped down. Thicker and thicker draperies of the dark purple rope-like growths dropped over everything like a net. They traveled for nearly an hour, one section of the swamp pretty much like the next, until at last a large island appeared. This one nearly a quarter mile wide, ringed with the thick-leaved swamp trees.
This is our home. The only place we can go when we wish to be out of the slime.
Nitrogen Carnivore pulled the raft up onto the hard-packed red dirt bank. Roxanne and Rona got out of the craft, pulling it a few more feet up onto the island to make sure that it didn't somehow slip back in. They followed the hulking towers of oozing swamp mud in toward the center of the island, Carnivore in the lead. After about 100 yards, they came to a large clearing. The trees at the very perimeter were knocked over right in half. The Narga's demolition methods were crude but effective. There were no houses that Rock could detect, just strange round clay sculptures 20 feet tall. 12 of the structures stood in a circle, facing one another. Inside the circle was a group of the Narga, pounding the earth.
What are they doing?
They are calling out to the poison of the earth. That which created us from the slime, out of death. I, my people, Roxanne, do not wish to live. For us, life is... It's hard to convey to you who are still human, but life is not worth living. Those of us who still have minds are trapped inside this foul, wretched prison where all we touch, taste, smell, and breathe is rot, disease, excrement. The rest have no minds anymore. I and two others control them like a man would control a dog. When I first found myself coming into consciousness from out of death, I thought I had fallen into hell. And I had. Every minute, every day I have been here, I have wished for death. We all do. But we can't die, Ted Roxanne. We are already made of that which death turns to. A soup of brains and crumbled bone. A stew of blood and disintegrating flesh. We cannot die. We are immortal. That is why we pray, why they are praying now. For the 12 molecules of ultimate poison are represented by the 12 globes we have built. They chant and they sing. They say, please let us die. We beg you to give us the paradise of non-existence. Take us from this swamp and into dryness and death.
Roxanne felt a deep sympathy surge out of his heart for the band of the wretched creatures. They had been cheated twice. First, given lives of degradation and pain to live out as mortal men. And then, having to do it all over again as hideous swamp creatures. They hadn't been given the chance that nature affords to all men, no matter how terrible their circumstances, to sink into that sweet oblivion from which nothing returns. Cheated of death itself. In the ornate Kansas Corn Palace, a palatial building constructed in the 20th century when the corn and wheat fields of America were the most fertile in the world, the walls were covered with immense flags showing red hammers and sickles crossed over an eagle, the Russian-designed new flag of the USSA. Today, the lobbies and auditoriums of the building were filled with dignitaries, military officials, and high-level bureaucrats, for today was the summit meeting between Premier Vasily, Colonel Kilov of the KGB, and President Zhapnov, President of the United Socialist States of America. Lawrence, Kansas had been chosen for its long international class runway, its low level of radiation, and because it was a relatively neutral zone, administered by Soviet trade officials rather than KGB or Red Army. Zhapnov had been the first to arrive, and after partaking of the luncheon menu several times over, the jowled nephew of Vasily, who retained his post of president solely because he was stupid enough for the premier to control like a puppet, headed out to the large green and blue-veined marble lobby to await the arrival of the others. He knew his presence at the meeting was largely formal, and that Kilov and Vasily would make the major decisions, so he felt rather bored with the whole thing before it had even started. He didn't know why he couldn't just head upstairs to his bedroom and enjoy the favors of the 14-year-old Siamese twin virgins his sex squad had dug up for him. He really must promote Captain What's-His-Name. His recent acquisitions had been quite stimulating.
Kilov!
Surrounded by 12 men, Kilov walked in his skin-tight uniform and field jacket. His dead eyes scanned everyone in the room, and when his gaze set on Zhapnov, he shuddered and sneered. He walked to the large conference table, took out a small flask of liquid, and popped four pills. Vasily came in next, wheelchair pushed by Rahala. If Kilov looked like death incarnate, then Vasily looked like death warmed over. His face was spotted with tiny hemorrhages, his countenance stark white, his body slumped like a disintegrating scarecrow under his thick wool blanket. But he was the premier of all the world, wielding more power than any man in the history of the planet. So the entire room stood as one, even Kilov, and gave the grandfather the red full-fisted salute. Rahala waved them to sit down, infuriating Kilov and Zhapnov, and wheeled Vasily over to the nearly half-foot-thick solid oak conference table that stood in the center of the large hall. The two other men of power grudgingly walked over, motioning their guards to stay behind, but not too far, and sat down. The three most powerful men on Earth, staring at one another's cool eyes. Vasily was the first to speak.
Gentlemen, so good to see you.
Grandfather, it's so good to see your health return so quickly.
Pardon me if I don't shake hands, but I am old and time is crucial. All formalities have by mutual agreement been cut to minimum. Let us get down to business. I have had Rahala prepare a suggested agenda of three parts, which he will give each of you. Rahala has my fullest confidence, understand. He will sometimes speak for me.
On the table is our agenda. If everyone would please take one.
This is the agenda. Perhaps we should just let you, Grandfather, and your servant do all the decision-making here.
Not at all, Colonel. Please don't take offense. I am merely trying to give a format to our discussions. You may make your own suggestions, amendments, etc.
And of course, I have a veto. This is not a simple vote on different issues. After all, your nephew sits with you.
Ah, yes, of course. We will all have a veto. Everything must be by total majority.
And with that, Kilov challenged every point of the rules for the meeting for nearly an hour. At last, they settled on the agenda.
First, all actions of any we three against any of the others must immediately and forever cease. That means Zhapnov, your assassins, my fat friend.
Assassins? What assassins?
The ones I skinned alive.
You... I haven't sent any assassins, but I will promise not to send any more. Is that acceptable?
Fine. And Mr. Premier, might I have your assurances that you do not intend to use either your Imperial Army, your Border Police, or your nephew's regular Red Army forces, or any part of your armed might against the KGB any place in the world? For the duration of this agreement.
Gentlemen, of course, we must stop any real or imagined activities against one another. Is that not right, nephew?
Yes, Grandfather.
After hours of haggling, they had at last drafted a document satisfactory to all. Rahala stood, provisions in hand.
The following provisions are agreed to at the Kansas summit of the Triple Powers. 1. All hostilities will cease among the three signatories to this pact. Any differences of opinion shall, in the future, be negotiated openly between the three. 2. A combined force of special penetration forces shall be drawn from the KGB, the regular Red Army, and the Imperial Guard to once and for all get rid of the main destabilizing factor in America, Ted Roxon. 3. A ceasefire shall be effective immediately between the forces of Vasily and Zhabnov on one side and von Reisling and his new Nazi alliance on the other. 4. No atomic weapons of any kind are to be used on American soil without express written permission from Premier Vasily. That is all. Are we ready to sign, gentlemen?
Yes.
Yes.
In an age of sham, this was perhaps the height to which lies and double dealing could be turned into a celebratory event.